If you take one step, then you will be a little closer to your dream than if you stay just where you are.
Welcome to Coming Home Well. I'm your guest host, Liz Booker, a retired Coast Guard helicopter pilot and writer on a mission to influence the demographics of aviation through story. As literary aviatrix, I have built a community of readers and writers around books featuring women in aviation and have interviewed authors about their books and their writing and publishing journeys. A large portion of these stories reflect the ways in which aviation history is indelibly linked to military history. This interview is a rebroadcast of the Aviatrix Book Review podcast in collaboration with Coming Home Well. While my interviews span the diversity of aviation experiences, I hope the ones that are featured here will educate and inspire those who listen. These are human stories of grit and courage, failure and success that happen to be about women in military aviation from around the world throughout our history. Hello and welcome. I'm Liz Booker, literary aviatrix, and I'm so excited to celebrate the launch of a new picture book by a former Air Force major, fighter pilot, and Thunderbird demonstration team pilot, Michelle Curran, call sign Mace. Welcome.
Thanks, Liz, for having me. I'm excited to talk about the book.
Oh, I am too. And as excited to kind of hear about your career as well. But let's start with the book. Can you give us an overview?
Yeah, of course. I feel like there's quite the backstory behind it, which I'm sure we're going to get into. But generally, it is based on all the interactions I had as a Thunderbird pilot, where I could see I was really inspiring kids to kind of chase whatever their big dream was. And so it's about a little girl who is inspired to be a pilot after seeing the jets fly over her school. And she gets a little bit of pushback once she starts to share that dream with her peers as to whether it's actually a possibility. But she has a really amazing relationship with her grandpa, who used to be a fighter pilot. And he takes her to an air show where she meets a female demonstration pilot. And that's kind of the thing that sparks the empowerment, I guess, that she can actually go after this dream.
So there's a thing that we talk about when we talk about, I have a Master of Fine Arts in writing for children and young adults. So I'll just start with that and thinking about children's books and the way that you chose to, the door that you chose to, you know, bring young people and especially girls into this story by, first of all, I mean, there were so many ways you could have written a book to inspire the next generation and to kind of carry on that impact that you were having on the demonstration team. But the way that you chose to do this one, I thought was excellent because the little girl is the main character and she is learning about what the Thunderbirds do. And she has a guide, she has a mentor, but she also has agency. You know, she has these good mentors telling her what to do, but she gets to make decisions and is given a pathway, instructions on how to succeed in pursuing that dream, which I thought was wonderful. Can you tell me a little bit about how the creative process for this book and kind of how you came to the decision to present it that way?
Absolutely. So for me, it wasn't that I just wanted to write a kid's book. It's that I specifically wanted to kind of embody that impact where kids have a moment. Either it's conversation or they see a role model or they read a book or whatever it is where they feel like it's talking directly to them and they see themselves in it and it just opens their eyes to what's possible in the world for them. And so I had those interactions so many times in person. I was like, how do I bring this into a children's book so it can continue to happen for those kids that aren't going to be at a Thunderbird air show? And my time on the team was coming to an end. And I just loved having that ability to inspire so much. I wanted to find a way to continue to do it once I was no longer in that role. And the idea to even write a children's book at all came from in 2019, my first year with the Thunderbirds. We were at the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum in DC. And we were doing an event there. So I'm there in my uniform. I go into the bookstore and it's super cool if you've never been there. I'm sure you have. But if listeners have never been there, just space stuff, aviation stuff, all kinds of cool stuff. I go to the book section and I see all the children's books. And there's just all of these amazing aviation stories. And I think there was only one or two that had a female protagonist. Most of the pilots that were portrayed were male characters. And I just saw an opportunity there. I was like, I want to write a book about a little girl who wants to be a fighter pilot and see it in this store one day. So still working on that and getting it in the Smithsonian. I'm hoping it's going to come full circle. But that kind of planted the seed for me. And then it actually took, like I said, that was 2019. And here we are in 2023 and it's just coming out. So it's quite the process. I actually wrote it during the pandemic when all our air shows were canceled and I had more time on my hands. And then I tried to pitch to publishers having no idea how that worked and got a lot of no responses from agents or polite no's. And then air shows started back up and it kind of fell on the back burner until I left the team and went into being an entrepreneur and what I'm doing now. And then I just connected through LinkedIn of all places with a ghostwriter who reached out to me asking if I was ever going to write like a novel. And I mentioned the children's book manuscript to her and she was like, well, I have the perfect person to introduce you to. And within weeks, I had met Endgame Press. They were very interested. We got it on paper and we were off to the races. And I was paired with an illustrator and seeing it come to life on the page. And it was just really quick once I found the right connections. But it took about 4 years from the initial idea to get where we are now.
Yes. And I have so many things to say about this. First of all, I checked out Endgame Press and that I love what they're doing. That's cool. And I'm glad that you guys were connected with each other. And that little story of somebody reaching out to you is fantastic. That doesn't happen for everyone. But my mind has been opened to various methods for getting your work out there in terms of publishing. But I do still come from this education for children and young adults in a world that is very, very solidly grounded in the traditional publishing space. And part of the reason for that is because of the gatekeepers. Getting books into the hands of children requires librarians and teachers and parents to do that. And the best way that I have been told to do that is really through traditional publishing because they have the right distribution and pipelines for that. But it's a difficult process. Not everybody is going to want to publish your book. So I'm saying all this for our other women out there who might have an idea for a book to inspire, because as you said, you went to the Smithsonian. There's hardly anything there with girl featuring young girls. So we need more books like this in the market. But there are certain things you have to do right. And you did a whole bunch of things right here, which means that your story will get into the hands of more young people, which is the entire point. So from the artist that I'm assuming the publisher connected you with this artist and put that story together. Love to hear about that relationship. And then having a ghostwriter help you who apparently, you know, knows a little something about writing children's books. There is definitely an art to that. So thank you for your patience in taking the long road to do it well.
No, for sure. It was definitely a lot of figuring it out as I was going. And there's so many different opinions on traditional publishing versus self-publishing versus royalties that you make and control that you have. And for me, it wasn't about making a bunch of money on the book. It was about getting it out there to as wide of audience as possible. And so traditional publishing seemed the best way to go for that, especially for a children's book. And one of the big obstacles was I'm not an artist. I didn't know any children's book illustrators, and it's a very specific niche of art for sure. They have to understand how to bring the story to life on the page. So even a very talented artist might not be the right fit. And finding a traditional publisher that was willing to take a look at the manuscript and go forward with it, they already have a list of illustrators that they've worked with. And it was a little scary. I would say that part was stressful because I got paired with an illustrator, and I had never met her. I knew nothing about her. I didn't even know her name until I actually was seeing the first illustrations. And so I lost all creative control as to having any input on those, which was scary. And when I got the email from the publisher being like, hey, here's the cover, it was stressful. And then when I opened it and saw it, and it's right behind me, this is, we didn't make any changes to it, this is what they sent me, I loved it. I actually teared up because I'm like, this is so perfect. The swinging of the hair, like you can just get this sense that she's just in like wonder of these airplanes flying over. And it's all of this emotion comes from just this one illustration. And so I have never actually met my illustrator. Hopefully we will at some point. But yeah, it's kind of crazy because they have such a huge part of the story. And it's a very, I guess, it seemed odd from my perspective, that relationship. I thought we would sit down and we would talk about it and brainstorm, but that's not really how it works with a traditional publisher.
I love that you just outlined that for people, because you've said all of that is the truth. And I know a lot of professional children's authors, that's what they do. That's how they make their living. And almost to a person, like I have never heard a negative story about a reputable traditional publishing house pairing them with an artist. It's almost universally, the people that I've talked to have had the experience that you've had where they were like, they get the work and they're just joyous about how it was represented. But it's a, but when you think about it, it's like they're your words. And we're doing, you know, you're representing some very specific technical sort of military stuff. And you are like, are they going to get it right or not? And, you know, they did really well. You've got some preview in the book. It, by the way, it launches on June 20th and it's available for pre-order now. And you've got some samples of the art on Amazon that I saw. And probably, on, do you have it on your website too?
There, yeah, the cover and then a few of those pages. Amazon's probably the easiest spot to just see it and read the synopsis and all the things and to pre-order.
Okay, well, that's awesome. I'm so excited about this book. I think it's going to have great impact. You're just going to sell everywhere you go now. People are going to want to copy this book from you for sure. Let's back it up and tell me about your path to becoming a Thunderbird performance team pilot. I want to hear all about that.
Yeah. So how much time do we have? No. So I spent 13 years on active duty and I flew the F-16 that whole time. And the first half of my career, I didn't really even consider that wasn't a goal, becoming a Thunderbird pilot. It was something that would occasionally pop up in conversation that I'd always be a little bit intrigued by, but I never told anyone that it was a goal. I never really set it as an objective for me. And I'm in like the last few months of my assignment in Fort Worth, Texas, which my first 3 years I was in Misawa, Japan with my first squadron, then 3 years in Fort Worth, Texas. And I had a follow-on assignment to go to New Mexico to be an instructor there teaching new students how to learn to fly the F-16. And I happened to see an email, and the Air Force sends out these Air Force Personnel Center emails all the time about different random job things that are unique that pop up. And I'll be honest, I generally didn't even read them because I kind of knew what I was going to do next. So I would just delete them without opening them, which I think a lot of people do. Sorry if there's anyone from AFPC listening. I happened to open that one and it was the hiring for the Thunderbird pilots. And not only was it that, but it was like the last reminder, like, hey, applications are due next week. If you're planning on applying, get them in. I'm sure they had sent out multiple emails before that that I just never looked at. For whatever reason, I'm at my desk, I open it, I scroll down, and I'm like, I actually meet all of these requirements. And I didn't even know beforehand what the requirements were. Like I said, it just wasn't something that I was really focusing on. And as I read it, I realized that I was finally experienced enough where I would met the requirements, but also kind of had the courage to actually consider applying. Because up until that point, it would have felt like something that I wasn't good enough to do or wasn't experienced enough to do. So there was some self-doubt there for sure. And now being on the other side and having hired replacement pilots multiple times, it's silly because I see the range of applications that come in and I'm like, I should have not worried about that at all. It's a wide range of people that apply. But yeah, I went to my boss and I was like, hey, sir, this is due next week. I'm considering, like, what do you think? Should I apply to the Thunderbirds? And I think that was such a great example of how powerful one conversation can be for someone, because he could have easily been like, hey, Mace, you know, they really need you in New Mexico. They're short instructors there. You already have that follow-on assignment, and this is due next week. I think we kind of missed the boat on this one. I just don't think it's a good time. And I would have been like, okay, and gone on to New Mexico. Instead, he looked at it and he was like, I think you would be amazing for this job. What do we need to do to make it happen? And that was just like so empowering to have someone that I really expect or really respected be like, yeah, this is, seems obvious. Why wouldn't you apply to this? You'd be great for it. And so that kind of gave me a little confidence boost as well to go through the application process, which takes, well, I applied in January and I think I found out in July. So there's a bunch of paperwork you submit, multiple in-person interviews you go to. I think we went from about 30 applicants to 12 semifinalists to 6 finalists to 3 people actually getting hired for the 3 open spots.
Wow. That's intense. That's intense.
Yeah, that was a lot. I know. That was a long answer.
No. There's so much packed in there that I love, especially the stuff about, I had those experiences in my career too, where I was, you know, well, first of all, I was a personnel officer, so I was sending those messages out. So I was kind of laughing about you not reading them, because when we were like, have thin candidate pools for things, I'm like, where is everybody? And I'd start calling people. I'm like, did you see this message? Apply for this,
like,
job.
No.
But then also like just having the experience of having bosses present opportunities, or me like going in with the long shot and then being like, absolutely, you should definitely apply for that. And that encouragement, because I could totally see that it could have gone the same way for me. I could have just walked out there and been like, okay, fine, I won't do that. You know, so
yeah, for sure.
That's amazing. But you know what I didn't hear from you is when, like, how did you become a pilot? Like, when did that inspiration start?
Yeah, I love this question because I think it's unexpected. When I was in the air show world, I think a lot of people imagined that I had been a kid in the audience at one point and, mm-hmm. you know, seeing the jets fly and been like, this is amazing, I'm going to go do that. But I grew up in a small town in northern Wisconsin. Not a military family and not an aviation family. So I was only like a 2.5 hour drive from EAA Oshkosh, which is just such a huge fly-in and staple in the air show world. And last year was my first year ever going. I never went as a kid, which people are always shocked by. I'll be back this year. But yeah, I didn't know about it. It just wasn't in my scope of what was out there. And as I came towards the end of high school, my parents were like, hey, you have really good grades. You could probably get a scholarship. Like, let's explore different ways to pay for college. And my dad actually suggested ROTC. And initially my reaction was, I don't want to do that. I want to be a normal college student and live in the dorms and go to parties. And like, as a high schooler, you have this idea of what college is in your head. That's not really accurate. but after looking into it a bit more, I was like, okay, well, I guess this is a good option. You could get a full ride to college under certain circumstances. If I'm going to do that, aviation seems exciting and the quality of life seems good in the Air Force. And so I'm going to look into, which I know you're laughing at. I'm like, I'm going to look into that. So I applied for an Air Force ROTC scholarship. I ended up getting one. And at that time though, my goal wasn't to be a pilot. I actually wanted to do 4 years in the military doing OSI, which is special investigations, and then get out and go to apply for the FBI. My end game was to be an FBI agent. I went to college. Yeah, right. People are like, why an FBI agent? I don't know, honestly. I get it.
No, I think it's cool.
it's like the whole, I think there are some ties between what I ended up going and doing. It's all like the kind of like pushing yourself, the protector kind of mindset. I was drawn to that. So I went to college as a criminal justice major because that made sense for what my goal was. And about halfway through, we went on a base visit with ROTC. We went down to Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida. And I got to see some fighter jets up close for the first time. And so I distinctly remember seeing 2 F-15s take off in full afterburner. And it was at dusk, so you could see the flame coming out the back, and You know, the jet noise, it just like vibrates your whole body. I got goosebumps. It was just a visceral experience and a pivotal experience for me, because at that moment, I was just so excited about what I was seeing. I was like, I want to go do that. What do I need to do to make that happen? And so that was the pivotal point. And from then on out, when they were like, who here wants to be a pilot? I would start raising my hand, and I competed for a pilot slot from there and ended up getting one.
That's awesome. That's so great. When I think about how many discriminators, like how many wickets you had to go through the funnels, like of first of all, getting into the Air Force, then getting into flight school, then getting the grades and the performance for jets, and then, you know, competing, as you said, with all this huge candidate pool down to three people, you know, out of 30 applicants that year, all of whom I'm sure were at least met the minimum requirements if they were applying, you know, so it's just a very competitive, like aviation in the military is competitive to begin with, but you're like at the pinnacle of that. I really admire you for having accomplished all of those things. It's really intense though, it seems like. I have a couple of questions. First of all, you unfortunately were performing during, you were on the team during COVID. And did you feel any disappointment about that? How did that feel for you?
Oh, a roller coaster of emotions. There's so much wrapped into that time. So we actually had our we use Air Force C-17s to transport all the Thunderbird personnel that aren't flying the jets there. So the team's 130 people. So we actually had the C-17 on the ramp at Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas. Our suitcases were loaded up. Our advanced pilot was already in Del Rio, Texas, which is where our first air show was for 2020. And we were briefing the rest of the pilots and jets to fly cross country to go there when the Air Force started to talk about a stop movement. And we're like, is this air show going to happen? Is it going to cancel? They decided to delay us going down there 24 hours, which turned into that air show canceling, which turned into months of air shows canceling. So it was very weird, because it's almost like being a professional athlete where you've just trained so hard for months and months and just practiced, put your body through the ringer, your mind through the ringer. And now you're like, we finally get to take this show on the road and we get to experience the fun part of the job where we get to interact with people and actually show what we've been working on. And we got right to the precipice of doing that, and then it stopped. And so it was just crazy timing. And within days, they're like, take your laptops, go home, you're teleworking, which as a fighter pilot, teleworking means you check your email once a day. And so there was so much uncertainty then, yeah. I think, as everyone was experiencing during that time. And then things were just evolving very quickly. And there was a lot of people throwing out ideas on how we were going to stay proficient in our skills and current mm-hmm. without getting each other sick. And there's just so much unknown at that time. There was a silver lining for me. I had actually met my husband and gotten married early in the 2019 season. And I have a stepson, and he was only 6 at the time. And so I was, you know, in a new marriage with a new son and trying to establish those relationships when I was on the road 240 days a year for the Thunderbirds was hard. And so early 2020, I ended up at home for a couple of months, and we were all at home. We were doing remote learning, which was terrible. Teachers need a raise. But I got to spend so much quality time with them that there was parts of it that I really loved. And then we realized that we had to keep flying. We couldn't just let these skills that we had honed for 4 months just completely disappear, because they're very perishable at that point early on in the show season. So at some point, someone had a good idea that we should start doing flyovers as a way to keep flying, but also to use the jets needed to fly. They perform better when they're not sitting on the ramp for weeks and weeks. Maintenance stuff starts to pop up when they do. We needed to fly. The money is already allocated. So we're like, what if we did city flyovers, and we kind of crafted our flight route over major hospitals where we know the medical personnel are struggling with all the demands of COVID. We know there's patients there. Like, how can we use this asset that we have for good and to really like bring the American people together and give them some sort of hope? And so that's where the whole America Strong flyover series, if you want to call it that, was born. And we ended up doing that for the next few months, all the way into, I think, May of 2020.
Yeah, I was out there watching you. I was excited. Yeah. I took my son to the park and waited and watched you guys fly over South Florida. So that was really cool that you were able to do something, and it was inspiring. So I know it wasn't the same as an air show, but we were inspired. You just couldn't interact with us.
Totally. And I think, honestly, we flew over cities that don't normally get air shows. Like, we flew right over like downtown Atlanta, DC, New York City, Baltimore, Philly. Like, we did this whole East Coast flight. It was like a 7.5 hour long flight. We air fueled a bunch. It was us and the Blue Angels. So there was a ton of coordination needed. Two different types of tankers, different airspeeds, different fuel consumptions. There was so much that went into that that people will really never understand the logistical lift that that was. But the number of actual people that saw the two teams fly during those months is way, way more than any normal air show season. And so it actually, like, if you were to look at, like, say, our social media following, it grew a ton during that time just because so many eyes were getting on the team. Like, people that live in the Bronx or Brooklyn or Manhattan that aren't, you know, aviation enthusiasts are just likely to never see the demo teams. But there we were flying like right over their apartment balcony. And so there were some, for sure, silver linings that came out of that time.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really great. So all of this intensity, being a fighter pilot, then being on the demonstration team, and then you're at 13 years of service, you're a major, and you decide to transition to civilian life. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so many reasons. I wish there was like a succinct way to say this is why I made that decision, but there's a lot of things wrapped into it. You know, getting married, like I mentioned, we weren't going to move anymore. My stepson is here in Las Vegas and his mom is here. So that's a whole new family dynamic that kind of keeps you in one place. And in my mid-30s, I wasn't going to prioritize my career and go into a long-distance relationship. So that kind of made the decision for me that I was going to leave active duty, since you have to move every few years. The reserves would have still been an option here at Nellis to fly for the aggressor squadron. But honestly, my body was really beat up after pulling 9Gs for 13 years, especially with the Thunderbirds. The profile I was flying as the left solo is the highest G profile of anyone on the team. And I am very confident the highest G profile of any fighter pilot in the Air Force, just because the high G missions are like the dogfighting type of things. And in a normal squadron, in a gray unit, you do that occasionally, but not every day. That's not your mission that you go, you know, 5 days a week and do. So I was dealing with a lot of back pain, neck pain, all the pain. And I just kind of took a step back and I was like, it's not really worth it for me to just beat my body down for another 7 years to get to retirement. And so I kind of just decided to prioritize my family and then my health over working towards 20. And I was in a unique spot, and unintentionally, I had kind of really grown this following on social media with all the cockpit jet videos that I was posting. Badass. And that made it very easy to think about options in the civilian world besides the obvious, which is going to fly for the airlines. And like I mentioned earlier, I just loved the inspiration part of the mission so much that I wanted to figure out how to continue doing that. And that's kind of how I ended up as a keynote speaker, as a children's author, and just self-employed, an entrepreneur, where I have the flexibility to kind of say yes to these amazing opportunities that pop up. And I get to be creative, which is really, really cool, and be my own boss, which is just such a shift from active duty. Yeah. And I'm a little bit over a year into it, and I am absolutely loving it.
Good. Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, it's been incredible.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple things. First of all, so I have a 20-year-old daughter who is very fit and works out a lot. She can't put on muscle though. And we both think you're an awesome badass because I've seen your arms. You wore a strapless dress to Palm Springs Museum. And I was like, oh, okay. But tell me about that. Like, how did you get in that kind of shape to take 9 G's? And look at you. You're just, you know, an Amazon woman from my perspective. You're tall, yeah, strong, and beautiful. We all want to look just like you. Tell me how you do it.
I get that a lot. I do get stopped by random strangers on the street sometime, and they're like, what do you do for your biceps? And I'm like, I skip biceps because I don't want them to grow anymore. I think some of it is just, I just put on muscle very easily. My husband always gives me a hard time. He's like, you could do like two curls and your biceps are just ridiculous, which is what a lot of people want. So some of it's genetics, but I just love working out. And I started lifting weights in college and I've been doing it nonstop since then. What it has looked like has evolved over time, depending on what my goals were, but it's just something I enjoy. I love feeling strong. It's very empowering and it does help mm-hmm. me inspire other people and empower other people. And I just love it. And I honestly was probably more fit than I needed to be for the role of flying the F-16 and pulling 9 Gs. Pulling 9 Gs is hard on your body. It is a workout for sure. But the funny thing is the people that are really, really good at Gs are short and stocky with strong lower bodies and high blood pressure. So we always joke that if you're like a short, stocky guy who can squat a ton of weight and you smoke, that you're just a G monster. Yeah, right? We wouldn't encourage anyone to smoke, but it was just kind of a running joke. So I would say that I lifted a lot more than most of the pilots on the team. Some of them were runners. Some of them just loved to golf, which I don't know if you can consider a workout or not, but that was their thing. So you just get very good at the skills you need to specifically pull G's in the aircraft, but not as high of a fitness level as actually needed as people would expect.
Oh, that's interesting. That's really interesting. Well, I just had to comment on that and thanks for sharing.
No, I
but more importantly, I'm so excited to hear about you sort of creating your own path and using your creativity and going out there and inspiring people. So what are you delivering? If somebody's listening and they need a keynote speaker, what are they delivering and how do they find you?
Yeah, so I'm very easy to find. If we'll start with that. LinkedIn is probably the best place for business type stuff. I write 5 times a week on there and it's all taking my aviation experiences and translating them into lessons that people can use either to kind of push themselves individually or for high performance teams and developing trust or leadership. I hit on a lot of different topics, but every single post I write myself, I put a lot of time into them. So that's honestly where I get most of my speaking business because business leaders see it and it resonates with them. And they're like, this could bring value to my company. I also have my website, macecurran.com, that has some little clips of speaking. It has the exact topics I speak on, but I would say to kind of generalize, it's not what people would expect. I don't get up there and just be like, look at all these cool fast jets and like the high performance side of things. It's more like I lead off with that because there's some really amazing visuals from the cockpit. But I really talk about vulnerable topics, self-doubt, imposter syndrome, holding ourselves back because of fear of failure, all things that I really personally struggled with, especially the first half of my career. And then kind of using my story of how I overcame them to get to a point where I was brave enough to put myself out there and apply to the Thunderbirds and step into that very high profile world where if you make a mistake, everyone's watching. And that didn't just happen accidentally. It happened really intentionally through some personal growth I did while I was in Texas on that assignment and really pushing myself outside my comfort zone and making little bold choices that over time, my tolerance level for what felt uncomfortable just went up and up and up. And it really empowered me to be bold and make these kind of scary decisions that just put me on a trajectory of growth very quickly. And so I share all of that and I kind of push people in the audience to be willing to step into the unknown a little bit and push them to grow.
Well, all of that resonates with me very much, especially for the past couple of years. Let me tell you something. If you had told me, I retired in 2019, and if you had told me that I would 2 years later be recording myself on video for the world to see, I would have said, no, that's crazy. That's terrifying. I would never do that. So I hear you on all those counts, and I hope I get to hear that speech sometime. So I'm going to make a point of tracking you down somewhere and hearing you speak. I can't wait. You are the 5th female Thunderbird performance pilot. Is that right?
Yeah, so it gets complicated. So I was the fourth female Thunderbird pilot that flew in the demo. We had five of us, though, that were pilots that were part of the team. It gets into the intricacies of we have a advanced pilot and a DO, a director of operations, that are also F-16 pilots, but aren't in the six that you see in the show. So, yeah, so I was the fourth. The fifth is now currently on the team. I love that when I was leaving the team, Lauren Schlichting was hired, and she also is a University of St. Thomas grad, which is where I went to college. So we were in ROTC together, which
is just so crazy. Cool.
Super cool, right? She was a sophomore when I was a senior. So it was amazing to kind of hand off this. I don't want to say that the male pilots don't have an impact, because they definitely do, but there's definitely something to be said for having that representation there for all the girls that are watching. It's very powerful for them. And so I loved that I could hand off that torch to someone else without there being a big gap, because before me, there was a 5-year gap between myself and Blaze Jensen, who was before me. And so it was just something that was missing for a while. So people would ask me all the time if I was the first, and I was like, no, I'm the fourth. Like, there's been a bunch, but people's memories are short. And so if that representation's not there, they lose that perspective that it's something that women can and do and have done.
You hear that, Navy? Sorry. <Right. laughs> I just, as a naval aviator, I have to just say, come on. You know, we I'm so proud and excited that the Blue Angels have their first female Lieutenant Amanda Lee flying now. But my goodness, it took them a minute.
And Amanda's amazing. I met her at WAI at the convention 2 years ago, and then we've kept in contact. And it was really cool to be able to kind of connect with her several times as she was applying to the team. As she found out she got hired, she called me the day she found out, and I actually started crying, which I'm not a very emotional person, but it was just like such a monumental thing. And when I was on the Thunderbirds, we worked with the Blues all the time because of the COVID stuff. And I was like, dudes, why have you never had a female pilot? What is the deal? And I mean, the people I'm talking to, they're in their own little snapshot of 2 to 3 years on the team. So they don't know what's gone on the years in the past. And they were all very welcoming and very open. So I'm like, what is the problem here? It just takes the right team with the right leadership, with the right applicant who's really qualified to all intersect. And one of those things had been missing previous years, and they finally all aligned. And Amanda's just such a great person to kind of fill that first. There's a lot of responsibility being the first, and I know she feels that, but she's just incredible. She's very level-headed, down to earth, and she was a crew chief before, so she enlisted in the Navy and was on the enlisted side, was a maintainer and commissioned, and now it's like come full circle. So it's, I think, really cool for other enlisted personnel to see that that's where her roots were.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's great. Well, we finally have one. All of the old ladies, we all went out to El Centro to celebrate her first show. So it was great. It
was awesome. It's super cool. I can't imagine the impact that she's having this season.
Yeah. Well, and you, all of you, I mean, just amazing. Thank you so much. I kind of love that you're talking about, you know, fear and overcoming doubts and stuff like that, because you guys put yourself out there in a really big, vulnerable way. It probably doesn't maybe feel like it because you're so well-trained and you're in this awesome jet. But the whole, you know, everybody's looking at you and you have to be that example. And so I think that could be a lot of pressure for a lot of people, and you clearly were able to handle it well and are doing something with it in the sort of post-military life. What is your long-term vision with this project that you have? Like, what's your big goal in life?
So I think I really love that I can be so flexible, and I think about that moment I saw those two F-15s take off, and I just was willing to listen to that moment of being like, oh my gosh, this is so cool, and actually do something with it. And being where I am now, I have the flexibility to do that all the time. And so I don't want to say, you know, 5 years from now, I'm going to be doing 50 speeches a year and I'm going to be in front of this many audience members. I think what I'm doing is going to continue to evolve over time. And as that grows with potentially like another book, but in the adult genre, which always sounds weird. My adult book, that sounds not like the right way to describe it. A personal development book. And but continuing to speak, but figuring out ways to get my story and get the things that I know really help people in front of those that won't ever find themselves in a corporate audience. Mm-hmm. So finding ways to do that through online content and online courses and digital there's just endless possibilities in that realm right now. And so I'm learning so much as I go, and we're like slowly growing things. But yeah, so I think my goal is to just continue to chase the things that I find exciting, that really fulfill my mission of inspiring and empowering other people, and to just be open and curious to new opportunities as they pop up.
Well, Michelle, thank you so much for your time and for all of that inspiration that you're putting out in the world. I mean, I'm a little bit older than you are, but you inspire me. And I know that through this book, you are going to reach so many thousands of little girls who, like you said, might never go to an air show. And it's whether it inspires them to join us in aviation or just inspires them to be something that they never thought that they could be before, you will have accomplished so much just by putting the story out there. So thank you.
No, it's really my pleasure. I always say that I selfishly decided to do this because I kind of got addicted to that dopamine hit you get when you help other people.
Yes.
And so I guess if I'm going to be addicted to something, this is the thing to do. But I'm like, I need to keep doing this. I don't want to just go back to flying fighter jets and lose that part of it. And so I have figured out a way to create it. So I just love it.
I love it too. That's awesome. Thanks so much for listening. I'd like to thank Shasta Ways and Michael Wilds of the Women Soar Group for their assistance in producing this interview. The Women Soar Group is a media company that gives women a platform to express themselves. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Coming Home Well, for your collaboration in helping these stories reach a broader audience. Writing is a deeply healing and cathartic exercise. It can help you process your experiences, whether you intend to share them with the world or keep them to yourself. Living the experiences of others through reading can also help heal, validate, and create a sense of connectedness. If you're interested in hearing about how these authors brought their stories to life on the page, check out the Writer's Room interviews on the Aviatrix Book Review website and podcast. If you'd like to join the book club conversations, look for the Aviatrix Book Club on Facebook. All are welcome. And connect with me on social media at Literary Aviatrix. I'd love to hear from you. Blue skies and happy reading.